Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. You're about to hear a trio of women united by a goal to succeed in television as series producers or showrunners. Up first, Tanya E. Taylor, the showrunner of Fuse's unconventional design test, Upcycle Nation. Taylor joins me next from Los Angeles. In 30 minutes, we'll reconnect with Michelle Palermo, creator producer of Series Fest winning pilot, Middle of Nowhere. That effort is now Middlehood, 10 episodes in the can and seeking a player. And our last half hour covers Jamie Strayer, who is the first-time creator-producer of finance-minded PBS outreach Opportunity Knox. Also ahead, our classic trivia contest and VH1 moves into BET's neighborhood. That's our takeaway of the week. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and Sooner Radio. I present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Spotify, iTunes, and many other leading podcast destinations. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. A very happy and great Veterans Day 2022 to you and all, and we welcome you on this Friday afternoon, the program about TV's current and future. 66 degrees and showers at the top of the hour here in New York. We're getting the remnants and waves of former hurricane, then tropical storm, now tropical depression Nicole. It's moving up the coast as we speak. We are supposed to get the big brunt of this storm overnight into early Saturday morning. We have a great trio of people coming your way over the next 90 minutes. We invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone and call them in. How? Use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe. Here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. And don't forget, we have the chat room. So if you're shy about the phone, use that. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn screen. Follow those instructions, and others will be live with you. Tanya E. Taylor from Upcycle Nation on Fuse was on Wednesday night. She'll join us live from Los Angeles after these news notes. This time, it's quickies. Vizio is now bringing scripted series into its Watch Free Plus lineup. The initial effort is Sanitarium, a three-part series following a trio of mental institution residents. ABC CMA Awards telecast Wednesday night drew 7.6 million viewers, up from all-time low 6.8 million last year. Netflix will enter a new programming frontier, live stand-up comedy performances early 2023. Chris Rock will be the headliner, and the special will play live worldwide. Phoebe Robinson's freeform series, Everything's Trash, will be a one-season wonder. Trash launched July 13th, with the last episode running September 7th. PBS NewsHour anchor Judy Woodruff will end her tenure there next month. Woodruff will move to a new primetime series on PBS beginning in 2023 or 2024. And sadly, we have a pair of passings today. Gallagher, the offbeat comedian using props from confetti to smash watermelons at age 76. Batman animated voice Kevin Conroy at age 66. He also was a supporting actor on the first season of the acclaimed CBS war series Tour of Duty in the late 1980s. Again, Kevin Conroy was 66, Gallagher, 76. And that is news notes for today. And now joining us live from Los Angeles, the showrunner and director of the new Fuse series, Upcycle Nation, Tanya E. Taylor. Tanya, welcome in.
Hi, thanks for having me. Sorry,
it's
I have a little
have you.
Under
all,
the weather.
For those who don't know, what is Upcycle? It seems that it's becoming the new movement in fashion design.
Yes, it is. Actually, it is a burgeoning trend. It's been going on for a while now. Everybody's been upcycling. We just call it different things. I mean, you know, when your parents take your older kids or your older brother or older sister stuff and they kind of reformat them to fit you, that's kind of upcycling. But we just never called it that. And now with sustainability in the fashion industry and people talking about fast fashion and how much billions of waste we have every year in landfill just from us buying fast fashion and the latest new outfit for the latest event that we have to go to. It's people are leaning more towards sustainability and saving the planet now.
So how does Upcycle Nation address this trend, which sort of combines fashion with sustainable living and recycling?
Well, what we've done is we've taken typical things that you would find and probably trash and throw away, things in our household, things we've had over the years. When you get married and you have that wedding dress, and it sits in the back of your closet and you never wear it again. You know, what can we do with that? Same thing with, like, quinceañera dresses and stuff like that. So we teach people how to use or repurpose things that you may not have thought about before. An old blow-up mattress that you've had in your home, you know, when you have your guests over, you buy that blow-up mattress and they stay there too long, and unfortunately after they leave, you can never use the mattress again because it starts deflating or there's a hole in it, and so you toss it away and it goes in a landfill. However, you don't have to toss it away. Like in one episode, one of our contestants actually takes that blow-up mattress and repurposes it into this really avant-garde, funky-looking vest that, you know, would, well, I would say Balenciaga would sell, but let's not talk about that. So he repurposes it into this amazing vest that, you know, any would fit any runway if you're looking for something unique. So it's teaching through the design eye from designers around the U.S. how you, too, can possibly upcycle.
Mm-hmm. What was the road for Upcycle Nation to travel from creating the series to getting it on Fuse?
Well, actually, Fuse called me in. They had the concept for Upcycle Nation. The original concept for Upcycle Nation was to take anything to upcycle. So you could upcycle furniture, you could upcycle computers, you could upcycle anything. They were just interested in the concept of upcycling, people repurposing, reusing, recycling things that were, you know, found in their storage lockers and things like that. And, you know, to start, when I came in from having a background of having worked on things like Project Runway and the hype and stuff. And I, you know, I mentioned to them that the simplest route to start the series would be in the first season to address what the current trend is, which is to upcycle fashion. Because that also doesn't exist in spaces. Shows like Project Runway in the past have done, I think, unconventional materials. It's an episode that they have in every season since its inception, and it's a fun episode. But when they do unconventional materials, they do it, and it's not necessarily something you can wear more than once. It's not something that stays together versus upcycling. In a true upcycle, we create things that can do that. So, you know, I worked with the execs and we were like, okay, so for season one, we're going to focus on fashion and we're going to take it there. And yeah, you know, basically they bought into it and they were like, yeah, let's do it. So it wasn't the typical me having to create a deck and pitch it to the network and have the network decide. They actually called me in to make their show for them.
Mm-hmm. I want to welcome Up Knox TV. I believe it's somebody who's dealing with Opportunity Knox. That's one of the shows we're going to be focusing on in about an hour from now. So welcome in. You have a question or comment for our guests right now. Put it in the chat room or give us a call, 646-652-2906. We're delighted to have you on board. Had you done production or show running work before? Is this like sort of your debut in the world of actually overseeing a show?
So I'm from Jamaica, the island, not the town in New York or in Queens. I'm from Jamaica, and so I have been show running, directing, producing content since, I want to say, 2002, right? But then a few years back, I decided I wanted to take my lens to a more global market, so I came here to the U.S. to do that via New York. I was in New York up until this year when I did Upcycle Nation. But Upcycle Nation is my first U.S. show run TV show. So basically my first international show, because people in Jamaica obviously are now watching Upcycle Nation on Fuse Plus as it streams.
Mm-hmm. And Upcycle Nation is on Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time on Fuse, which is available on not only on cable and satellite, but also through smart TV sets and smart TV devices. We're speaking with the showrunner and director of Upcycle Nation, Tanya E. Taylor. She joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour. We're just getting started with this 90-minute edition on Veterans Day 2022. Up Tomorrow will be televised. Tom Abbott, I'm with you live from Nueva York, 66 degrees at the top of the hour. We want to hear from you, so give us a call, 646-652-2906, or as Op Knox TV did, get into the chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, my lead guest has had a very interesting career in television. In his late 20s, he actually produced Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, the popular long-running medical historical drama with Jane Seymour on CBS. What's he doing now? He's overseeing his own made-for-TV movie empire. His name is Tim Johnson. This year, he is producing more than 40 made-for-TV movies for all sorts of players. And this holiday season, he's got 11 movies up in the shoot, including a big one for Netflix. Tim Johnson joins me as my lead guest of Johnson Production Group Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. You have a very interesting host on Up Cycle Nation, a woman by how do you say her first name? I'm not going to try. I want to hear from you first.
Her first name is Karuchi. So it's Karuchi Tran. It's the Karuchi Tran, who is fabulous. She's an Emmy Award-winning producer from The Bay, which is a series that aired some time ago. But then most recently, she was on Claws, that was on TNT with Niecy Nash.
Yes, and a great show, ran several seasons on TNT. Of course, Niecy now is doing The Rookie Feds for E1 and ABC. And I understand that Karuchi also did Bel-Air. By the way, the creator and executive producer of that show from Peacock were on our show back in the wintertime. Yeah. And we'll be back for a second season. So she's had a lot of great experience as an actress, but she's also very into fashion as well.
Yes. So when we first approached her, she was quite excited about it because she is very big on fashion and she's also very big on sustainability. So one of her stylist partners is actually an upcycle artist herself, an upcycle designer. So it was really interesting because Karuchi made sure that almost every episode, if not every episode, she wore upcycled pieces that either her stylist created herself or she sourced from upcycle artists. So it was really good about that. The other thing is, you know, Karuchi is also an executive producer on the show, and in that she actually helped to guide some of the more poignant episodes that we did. You know, like we talk a lot about sustainability, but we also delved into culture. And also in her role as what I call the style maven of the show, so she's the fashionista, if you will, what she managed to do was she managed to guide the vision as a mentor to all the designers that came in. So it was quite fun to have her as part of the team.
How do you mesh the two visions, given that this is your first U.S. project and she's been around quite a while, both as actress and also as somebody in the fashion world?
Well, the thing is, she leaned very heavily. When she came on board, we basically had most of the episodes, if not all, I believe, locked in terms of creative and what the challenges were supposed to be. So it was just for her to put her stamp on it at that juncture. And she actually trusted me from the very beginning of the process, which is great. You know, she's like, I come from a more visual field, and you come from that fashion world and that upcycle world. So she trusted me with the fashion and the vision and the challenges. And, you know, she'll tell you, when she came in, she was like, girl, I don't know what all these lines, I'm going to need a teleprompter. And I was like, you don't? Because as a director, it's just a personal pet peeve. I don't like teleprompters because I think it tends to make, sometimes it makes hosts look like they're not engaging with the audience. And I was like, don't worry about it. I got you. The lines are going to be nice. They're going to be written in your voice so you'll feel comfortable saying the things that you're saying. You're not putting on a role. This is you. This is your turf. You need to own it. This is your garage that everybody's coming into. And so working with her on that was brilliant because she took it in and she owned it and, you know, brought in her fellow judges, Jerome Lamar, who is, you know, a fashion guru in his own right. He, you know, he's called the style monk, if you will, and he's on the New York fashion scene. He's in everything. They just did an article on him in Vogue, I think. And Peter Cho, who is an upcycle designer. Like, he is phenomenal. He once took shoes and made into a chair, you know. So she trusted them to be her design support, if you will. So Cho is very technical, And Jerome is just like, yes, this could sell. And Karrueche was like, I would wear this or I wouldn't wear this, but I can also see, you know, the girl next door wearing it, and it's not necessarily my style, but yeah, you know, it would work at Coachella for somebody else, that kind of thing. So it was her coming in and kind of putting her stamp and trusting. And that was the thing, is she put a lot of trust in me for the first time that we were working together. And, you know, I really admire that. She also, I think she trusted me from a standpoint of female empowerment also. We're two black females in the industry. And so it was kind of like girl power, and we can do this. And we stuck together and made it happen. It was great.
Earlier today, I saw the episode that will run on Fuse next Wednesday. I'll talk more about the episode. But there were two things about the format that were interesting to me. One was you mentioned that it takes place in sort of a garage, a West Side Story kind of, there's a little bit of a throwback. And I'm curious, you know, how you came up with the idea. Both of you came up with the idea of having it in a garage that's sort of a little bit sort of gruff, a little, you know, graffiti on it, on the walls, and that kind of thing. I'm very curious, it said West Side Story-esque type of setting.
Right. It was very gritty, very New York back alley, New York alleyway kind of scene. I, you know, and funnily enough, the studio we found here in L.A., is woman owned, and they used to work in production in New York, and they moved to LA, so they run the studio Electric Pony. And I was looking for something that had that brick wall of New York. I was looking for something that had those harder lines and harder edges, because I felt upcycling is less sleek and sexy, if you will. It's more gritty, grungy, because you're pulling from things that are old, recycled, almost trash, you know, and you're trying to make beauty out of that. And so I wanted them to be in a space where they felt comfortable getting dirty, if you will, and felt comfortable just being in the trenches with it. I walked into Electric Pony, and they have the walls that were distressed. I mean, there are other studios here that I saw in L.A. that have the brick wall, but it wasn't as like half painted and washed out like they had it. And then also to build that, you know, when you're talking about budgets, you know, and this is my showrunner hat now, I was like, you know, I don't have the budget to build that. If it already exists, let me just use that. So we left a lot of the gritty infrastructure in there. The floors were the same. And actually, a funny story is after we booked the studio, I found out from the studio owners that the studio had once been a sewing factory. So it was like, you know, the universe just, it was like, yes, this is where you need to be. This is a space you need to be in. And so we just put things in that complemented that grunginess and that grittiness. And, yeah, you know, what came out was absolutely beautiful.
The other thing is, when you were picking contestants to be in this program, did you want people, everyone, to have some level of experience with upcycling, or were you willing to put on fashion people who had no experience whatsoever, who could bring their own kind of flavor, or sort of their own discovery, if you will, to the process?
So the thing is, because the show has these two challenges, so in our simple upcycle, it's 1 hour. You have 1 hour to make something. And in our complex upcycle, you have 5 hours to make something, which is not a lot of time to sew anything. So unlike a lot of other shows of this nature, like Chopped, where you have food, you can make an entire meal in 30 minutes. You can make a meal in 2 hours. You know, it's difficult to create a piece of clothing in just an hour or in 5 hours, something that's wearable, something that's neat, something that, you know, we could put on a runway. So with that in mind, I reached out to our casting agent through Wildside, Wildside Media, I believe. And the ladies there, also a female-led operation. Wow, I didn't realize I was doing the girl power thing this strong. But, yeah, these women, I challenged them to find cast that could sew, because they had to come in with a certain level of skill to start with. And also, if they already know how to upcycle, you know, it lends easier to them being able to finish in an hour or finish in 5 hours. So the short answer is yes, they had to have the skill level of upcycling. So, and there's so many upcycle artists out there. There's a kid that I recently started following on Instagram. And when I say kid, I don't think this gentleman could be more than 10 years old. And he's actually upcycling. You know, so he's taking previously loved items and he's stripping them down and recreating them. And there's also a different skill to be able to break something down and see it for all its parts to then make it into something new. A fashion designer typically takes bolts of fabric, and so they can create something from a flat nothing, versus an upcycle artist is able to look at something and see something else and how they can transform that thing.
We're speaking with Tanya E. Taylor. She is the showrunner and director of the new Fuse series, Upcycle Nation. It's on Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on that network, which is available on not only cable and satellite, but smart TV sets and smart TV devices as well. Tanya joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Smart Be Televised. Happy Veterans Day 2022 to all of you. Simon Abbott with you live from the other side of the U.S. of A, New Haven, York, 66 degrees, top of the hour. We are getting rain and waves because of the remnants of what was hurricane, now Tropical Depression Nicole, which we are supposed to get the big brunt of that overnight tonight into Saturday morning. If a question or comment or many minutes with Tanya, make that call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. We had more than 300 replays on Blog Talk Radio alone over the last day. Thank you so much for that. And if you want to check us out, all you got to do is go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, or check us out on podcasts. We're available on the iRadio Podcast Network, on Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, podvine.com, many other great places, as well as our website, tomorrowwilbetelevised.onpodium.com. And coming your way Thanksgiving week for the fourth year in a row, it's our Thanksgiving week triple header. Three shows, back to back to back, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Most will be at this hour. We are thinking about maybe having the Wednesday show a little later in the day, like 5 or 6 p.m. Eastern time, which would be 2 or 3 p.m. Pacific. So stay tuned. We're already working on guests for that, and we hope to start giving you the lineup as early as our next show this coming Monday afternoon. What's been the reaction so far to viewers with what you're doing?
Oh, they seem to love it. I had a friend in New York call me up, and she was like, oh, my God, this is hilarious. The first episode that aired, she's just getting to it because she's also on film. She was like, Jonas is hilarious. Jonas is the FIT student. He's an FIT student at FIT, I think, this semester, so he's based there in New York. But he's the youngest contestant we had, and he was 18. And when I say hilarious, like, he had the funniest one-liners. And most of the contestants were so fun. I shouldn't say most. All of them were so fun and so engaging that the show itself has just, you know, it's not your typical fashion series, and everybody is getting that. The judges are honest. While they're nurturing, you know, they will also tell you when you're going down the wrong path. And when you've gone down the wrong path and you didn't listen, they will say, you didn't listen. So, and we left all of that in. We left their natural camaraderie, their natural energy in the show. And then we also tried to pull that out of the contestants in a short space of time. And we managed to, I think, capture some of their, you know, best or their highlights very well in 42 minutes, you know. And that's the thing. It's crunching. That was the one part of the process that just, you know, upset me. It was like cutting out all these beautiful things, you know, to make this 42-minute show because there was so much more to some of the contestants that, you know, we couldn't share. But so far the audiences are loving it. The contestants are enjoying it. Their family and friends are enjoying it. And, you know, a lot of – because we don't have any losers on the show, as in nobody's eliminated. It's just you win – or you don't win, you know, because we don't have that. It's more of a positive show and a positive spin on this type of show. So I think from what I hear, audiences seem to be loving it. The comments seem to be rolling in. The show is excellent. It's fun. It's interesting to see another light of sewing. One of the camera operators has determined that she now feels that she can show. So, not sure why, but after watching the contestants over the period of 2 weeks, she was like, yeah, I could do this now. Yeah, I know how to thread a bobbin.
Yeah, you mentioned a moment ago, Tanya, that that the series captures with some of these contestants some poignancy. Where does that come from?
Well, a lot of people, it's getting that people energy, their energy in there. The casting was not only, and when you cast for these series, you're not only casting for skill level and, you know, that kind of thing. You're also casting for, well, with me at least, demographics and cultural experiences, and also what brings people into fashion. Why are they upcycling? And what makes the, what drives them, what makes them happy? And it's bringing that out on set. What we did was we had great story producers who brought those things out naturally in interviews. However, we created an environment where they walked in and they felt like they were part of this family that we had on set. And I think that's really, you know, they didn't feel disassociated from their cameras, their camera operators. They didn't feel disassociated from their story producers. They had a great casting team led by Monique Barnett, who Monique Garrett, sorry, who did like the most, she got to know her contestants, her and Kobe. And so when they came in, they were outside of their comfort zone, but the comfort zone for the comfort became the people around them. So we knew they were, we were putting them, we're throwing them a little off kilter. So we gave them that comfort to be able to talk to us and to, you know, ask us questions and that sort of thing. Before every show, for example, I would walk in before the hosts come in and everything, and talk to the contestants and introduce them to the space and, you know, introduce them to their specific camera operators and stuff like that. So it is creating this environment where they felt comfortable to thrive in and, you know, to make mistakes and to have fun and to ask questions. So, yeah, I think that's where it came from in capturing the heart of the contestants.
So, Tanya, where do you go from here? A second season of Psycho, developing another show for Fuse, working with other networks. Where do you see your TV horizons going?
Well, I'm working with other networks, definitely. I'm always looking for opportunities to create more content that's fun while it's making cultural statements and educating and uplifting audiences. So I'm actually working... I start next week on another project for another competition series for one of the streamers / studios that I can't say what it is right now. But, you know, aside from that, yes, we're looking forward to hopefully when I'm done this, you know, Fuse will be ready for season two because we're ready to go with that. You know, the host and judge trio are chomping at the bit to get started with another season because they were like, oh my God, this is so good. You know, I can see how this could be a movement and that kind of thing. So, yeah, you know, season two of Cycle Nation, yes, and definitely on to other projects as well.
And you can watch Upcycle Nation hosted by Karrueche Tran this Wednesday night. That's 10 p.m. East Pacific time. By the way, the episode coming up this coming Wednesday deals with holiday presents, where the contestants have to pick at random from a shopping cart filled with holiday presents. They don't know what the presents are beforehand. They have to open them up and then do their thing. Again, Upcycle Nation, Wednesdays, 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific time on Fuse TV, available on cable and satellite, as well as smart TV sets, smart TV devices, and multi-channel bundles. Check your local web. Fuse is available in the area on cable and satellite. For more details about the promo online, go to fuse.tv. That's FUSE.TV. Tanya Taylor, thanks so much for coming on. Congratulations on how the first season is going. Best to everybody, cast and crew. And hopefully we will hear more from you, not only maybe on a second season of this, but other projects as well in the area of Unscripted TV. It's been a delight having you with us.
Same here. Thank you so much, Simon. Take care.
You too, Tanya. Have a super weekend.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
Tanya Taylor joining us live from Los Angeles. Coming up in our next half hour, we're going to reconnect with someone we had on this program before. When we did, it was at Series Fest in Denver, and she was winning awards for a program called Middle of Nowhere. She made two, not one, two pilot episodes of it. Well, now that show has grown into middlehood. She has put together 10 episodes, and she wants a buyer and wants it soon. Her name is Michelle Palermo. You'll meet her live from Los Angeles shortly. Also coming up our next half hour, our classic trivia question, and we're also going to pay tribute to one of the best sportscasters ever, a pioneering one named Fred Hickman. He passed away yesterday. If you don't know about him, you ought to, and we will do that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com. Together, reaching over 75 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, BTR is your home for successful women radio. Check out the latest episode Monday, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget, best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our second half hour of this 90-minute Veterans Day 2022 edition of Tomorrow Will Be Televised, the promo about TV's current and future. Simon Appbaum with you live from New York, 66 degrees at the bottom of the hour. And we have two more great guests coming away in this hour ahead. So be part of the program. Interact with our guests. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Our next voice that you'll be hearing, our second woman of this episode, we actually met a couple years ago when she had a pilot, two of the same show, called Middle of Nowhere. It was a big winner at Series Fest, the Denver-based programming fair we have covered from the get-go. Well, the person you're about to hear from has not stopped with trying to make that into a series. In fact, thanks to a Kickstarter campaign, she is taking Middle of Nowhere, which was two episodes. She has now made a 10-episode series called Middlehood, and she is trying to get someone, maybe a network near you, to make it happen and play it for you. Joining us live from Los Angeles, creator and producer of Middlehood, Michelle Palermo. Michelle, great to have you back with us.
Hey, Simon. It's great to be back.
So for those who didn't catch us first time around, tell everybody about what was originally called Middle of Nowhere, what's it all about, and how did you get to create and produce it?
Okay, well, I got to create and produce it because I wrote it. It's based loosely on my own life as a middle-aged woman, faced with lots of different challenges at a certain point, lots of different forks in the road, aging parents, a crazy politically divided family, a relationship friction. I have a lot of girlfriends who in middle age got divorced, and so I leaned into that as part of my storyline. And I wrote Middlehood, Middle of Nowhere back then, and decided to make it into a pilot on my own. Well, not on my own. I got a team together and cast it, but self-financed because it was a very personal story. I really wanted to tell it a certain way, and I thought it would be a fun experiment in middle age to do something no one had ever done before. So I went ahead and made the pilot. We actually made two episodes because as we were making the pilot, I figured a lot of the locations we were using were also in episode two. So I figured as long as we were spending money, why not spend an extra couple of days and make another episode? So we made two episodes of the show, the pilot and episode two. And then COVID came and shut us down, and so when COVID came, I took that time to actually edit the show. I wrote it, I directed it, I executive produced it, and because we were kind of stuck in limbo, I edited the show, and then we took it out in the summer, spring and summer of 2021 to festivals. I was hoping to find somebody who would look at the pilot in episode two and go, this is great, let's make the series. And then we went to a bunch of festivals. We won Best Television Show at New York International Film Festival. We won Audience Award at Series Fest, Best Drama, Pilot, which is funny because we're a comedy drama, so sometimes we win for comedy and sometimes we win for drama, at North Fork TV Festival, and we won the Audience Award at Dances with Films, among others. And so we had this great success, and people were going, we want more and more and more. Let's see more of this. And yet, because of the way that television is done, there's really no path from winning a television festival, right, as a pilot, into making that exact cast, crew, into a television series. It's really not something that's done. And so I decided to do it myself. That's to invent it. So what we did was we wanted to make an entire season. I had written an entire season, and it's actually a total of 8 episodes, not 10. But so I had written, you know, we'd made 1 and 2. I had 6 more that I wanted to do. We did a private equity situation where we tried to raise some of the money. We raised a little bit of money that way, and I put in a little bit more money that I didn't have. And then we were like $130,000 kind of away from where we could actually make the show. And we have such an amazing team of people that are working on this show. My co-producers, Lolly Howe, Larry Gilbert, my stars, Elena Wall, Mark Damon Espinosa, Richard Milanese, Lisa Goodman. I could go on and on. There are 51 actors in season one. So I could take up the whole time telling you everybody's name. Even our crew, my test and our DT, everybody chipped in, and we did this Kickstarter campaign. And it was crazy. We did 40 days, and we raised $130,000 to bridge our gap, which is, I guess, I didn't know this going in, but I guess like 1% of Kickstarter campaigns over $100,000 actually raise their money. Good thing we didn't know that going in, because we did it. And so we went back and started making our show in April of this year, making our next 6 episodes. And within 2 days, we got shut down by COVID, which was absolutely mortifying. We were all set to go. We had our whole schedule done for April. Anyway, long story short, we finally finished after 4 COVID shutdowns on August 29th. We filmed our last scene. And now I'm editing the show and looking for a buyer. So that's the story of how it happened.
And we're going to get to the hunt for the buyer in a few moments, Michelle. It's one thing, you know, to be part of a television series that the pilot has been picked up by a network, whether it is a CBS or a Netflix or an Amazon or anybody else, and recruit people, cast and crew. What is it like to recruit cast and crew to do to fulfill your vision of a television series where you don't know if it will even end up on television somewhere?
Well, that's a great question, actually. I didn't have any issues with that, partly because and this is tooting my own horn, which I guess I'm supposed to be doing that, right, because I'm on a podcast. These are great characters. There are no, they always say there are no small roles, only small actors, but there really are no small characters in my writing. I don't do that. I kind of write from inside out, so every character has a story. And certainly for the people who are, the 25 main family people in my show, these are roles that don't come around very often. The role of Lisa is, who's our, our Elena Wool plays her, and she's our star of our show, our lead. She gets a chance to do pretty much everything in the show. it's a comedy, it's a drama, it goes from high to low. Our first season, just to let you in a little bit into sort of the mechanisms of the show, is we go back and forth in time. I call the show sort of a mixture, comp-wise, of like the rawness of Better Things, the political conflict of All in the Family, and the sort of time-shifting, whimsical nature of This Is Us, right? So we go back in time with our main characters, and we go everywhere. I mean, we go back to the 1980s with the middle-aged people in the family. We go back to World War II Germany with the mom when she's in the bunker waiting for the war to end. We go back to 1960s Milwaukee at a frat party with the dad. I mean, we're all over the place in this show. And so, to get back to your question, I think the reason that people jumped into this was because they were getting a chance to do roles that don't come around very often. And to do a story whose scope is so large within the context of a half-hour show. And it really is comedy drama. It is so reflective of life, our show. In the same moment that you're crying, you can burst out laughing. So I think that's how I got them. But they're great. It's the best cast I've ever worked with, and I've worked with amazing actors, so I don't mean to be insulting anybody else that I've ever worked with. But, that's just how good they are. They're just solid actors, and they are so committed to this show. It's amazing. I got really lucky, I think.
We're going to talk about that in a bit. And for those who don't know, you have a track record in television. You work with people like David E. Kelly, who just came out with The Calling, a.k.a.
Yes.
Reggie the Missing on Peacock. You've done some work with Lifetime. I mean, tell folks what you've done before striking out with this project.
Well, I call myself the pilot pitch queen, really. I've written so many pilots. I did work with David Kelly. I have a really odd, interesting life. I started out as a playwright, but I also spent a great amount of time in politics. I left Hollywood for a while to go be chief of staff to First Lady in Virginia. And so I had that political experience, which brought me back to Hollywood, which is how I ended up developing a pilot with David Kelly and then a different one with Peter Horton, who's New Amsterdam, 30-something. And, you know, I did a lot of political piloting for a while, you know, sort of like I would go out every year and pitch a political pilot, and then it was a historical fiction pilot. And the show that I sold to Lifetime was actually an upstairs, downstairs in a governor's mansion because that's where I worked. They didn't put it on the air because they were a little afraid of getting into politics. In fact, that particular year, I was actually, unbeknownst to us, Peter Horton and I, who'd worked together before that, both had competing shows going to see if they got a green light for the pilot on Lifetime. You know, and he thought mine got greenlit, and I thought his got greenlit, and neither one of ours got greenlit because they didn't want to do a political show. So I've worked on, years ago, I worked on Boy Meets World, and I've, you know, ghostwritten stuff, and I've sold a lot of different pilots, but I've never had the actual joy, as many, 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 many writers don't, of actually being able to take my story and work it out in series. And it's the hardest part, I think, of television writing, right, or television pilot writing, because, you know, years ago it was that you just pitched the pilot. Nobody ever wrote the pilot. I started writing pilots back in the 1990s, really, because if I get an idea, I like to write it out rather than talk it through. But it really wasn't until Mark Cherry sold Desperate Housewives as a pilot after it had gotten rejected as a pitch that people started actually writing pilots and then pitching written pilots, right? He sort of broke the ground for that. And so, you know, whether you're writing up a pitch or writing a pilot, when you write a television show, you write longevity. Right? They always ask you in the room, like, what's the 100th episode of the show? So when you're writing a television pilot, you're always thinking, like, where do these characters go? You're planning a giant long life for them. And so even in the inception of your story, you're thinking about season 3 and season 5 and where do these characters go and trying to build characters that are deep enough, right, that they can live in people's lives for years. So when that gets shut down, it's heartbreaking because you actually feel like you're killing them, you know, like you're burying them. And it's just so it was really wonderful to be able to give my characters that I had loved and, you know, certainly they're inspired by people in my own life. So in Middlehood, a true life and to let them work through a season. I have not had the luck to have that happen in my career yet. So I made it happen.
And the person making it happen, the person you're hearing this half hour on Suave Televised, is Michelle Palermo. She is the creator producer of Middlehood, which is a series looking for a player to have it run somewhere on a network near you. She joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Suave Televised, and we are delighted to have you with us on Veterans Day 2022. And if you have a question or comment for Michelle, make a call. We want to hear you, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Don't forget, coming up before the top of the hour, classic trivia question of the week. We posed the question on Monday, and we're looking for a winner, and today it might be you, so stay tuned for that. Also, we will remember a wonderful sportscaster named Fred Hickman. He was a groundbreaker in so many ways in so many places, starting with CNN, when it started in June of 1980. Fred Hickman, a tribute to him, also before the top of the hour. Michelle, who plays you on Middlehood, and what advice did you give that actress about how you should be played?
That is a great question. So The woman who plays me is an actress named Elena Wool. She's incredibly gifted. She's very different than I am, although we're sort of the same. She's physically incredibly different than I am. We're sort of like, we started out very similar and kind of branched off into different ways. I left her alone for the most part. The last thing you want to do is remind an actor that they're playing somebody who's directing them. That I can't even imagine. I started out years and years and years ago as an actor. I can't even imagine the pressure. So I tried to give her the freedom to play Lisa. We talked about Lisa sort of being our baby, right? She's part me and she's part her. And there are certain things that she does with the character of Lisa that are very different than me, but they work. And somehow between her and I, we created a really compelling, funny character. She is incredibly gifted actress. She's also one of the gamest actors I've ever worked with. I mean, we've had this woman inside a swimming pool with all of her clothes on. We've had her on top of a mountain screaming out her lungs. We've had her stuck in a car, you know, inside a soundstage that's all green screen for 4 days. I mean, she is such a trooper and so good at what she does. I'm so, so lucky to have her. And she is a joy to work with. So I got lucky. This could have been hard. She made it quite easy.
You've also went out of the box with some of your casting choices. For example, you have an Instagram person named Samantha Gangle, also known as Little Sam Sam K. How did she come into the picture?
Well, honestly, I didn't cast her because of her Instagram following. I cast her because she came in to audition for me, and she's like a wonderful actress. And you know, she plays Mira, who is the daughter of Nisha, who is one of our main family's fiance. And so she's sort of a stepdaughterish character. And she came in to audition, and she was just this like wonderful, open, you know, young woman. She's playing a teenager, a 16-year-old. And she was wonderful, and she got the part. And that's how I cast everybody, by the way. I don't cast because somebody's a star. I don't cast because somebody's got followers on Instagram or Facebook or because they're a Twitter person. I cast in the room. My co-producer, Lolly Howe, and I, and Larry, when he can, we get in the room. And we, even with this, we got into a room. We were one of the first places that live cast, honestly. We did in-person casting right after COVID. With masks and safely and everything. But anyway, we get in a room with people and really feel out their, you know, their honesty because as much as it sounds counterintuitive, the camera picks up stuff that you would pick if you were very close to somebody, right? So in person to me is the best way to cast. Anyway, Sam came in and auditioned, and it honestly wasn't until we were shooting, right, that, you know, it was in between takes and the family's at the table. We had 12 people in this dinner table scene, which was mayhem. But, you know, we're in between takes and I hear this person singing and I turn around and it's Samantha is playing her phone and it's her singing because she's a singing sensation. A little did I know when I cast her, and an Instagram sensation. And so that's when I actually found out that that's who she was. You know, that's what she did. But she's got some amazing covers of songs, and she's got two originals out. We've got, you know, myriad different kinds of people on our show. Giuliana DiStefano is a rising comedian, but none of this did I know when I cast them, right? I cast them because they were the best people for the role. And I can say that quite honestly. I had no idea, you know. Mark Espinosa, of course, plays Bill, and I did know who he was. He's a friend. He worked with me on another show a while back, a web series that I did. We actually even got Gabriel Carteris to come in and reunite for the first time since 90210 on screen with Mark Espinosa to do a little part in the season finale. So, but I always cast actors because they're good. Not because of their popularity.
Michelle, is anybody nibbling? Is anybody interested in taking on Middlehood? Are you getting any calls, whether it's from Netflix or Hulu or Crackle or Amazon or smart TV set makers that are or device makers that are now getting engaged in original content, whether it's Roku or, as you reported at the top of the program, Vizio is now taking on a scripted series for the first time. Who's in play here?
Well, I don't know who's in play because we literally just, put this out last week that we're ready. I wanted to make sure that I had enough of this series ready so that I didn't get inundated by people, wanting to see it, and I was still putting it together. So I just started to put my feelers out. We have it out at a couple of places. I actually went to AFM last week and saw a talk with Jennifer Vox from Roku. And if I can put a pitch in, I think that would be a really good fit for us. not that we wouldn't consider everybody, but it feels like a kind of an up-and-coming, interesting place for original series. I didn't know that about Vimeo, that they're doing an original scripted series, but it makes sense because there's so much stuff up there.
We also just hired Charlie Collier, formerly of Fox and AMC Networks. And, of course, they are now making waves as an original content maker, i.e. Zoe's Extraordinary Christmas. We had Austin Weinberg on nearly a year ago, which was an Emmy Award nominee for Best Made for TV Movie this past summer. And now they have Weird, the Al Yankovic movie with Daniel Radcliffe. And people are talking about that for next year's Emmy Awards for Made for TV movies.
Yep.
And with Charlie Collier aboard, there's a lot of talk that they are game for original scripted series. Chad, which was going to the second season, which was going to be on TBS and knocked off because of Warner Bros. Discovery's financial problems, they are now picking up that second season. So they may be there are a lot of players out there that you can
there are a
through.
Lot of players out there. Well, they just need to know that we exist. I mean, we're a little bit scary, I think, to be very honest. We're a little bit scary because nobody's done this before. So basically what I did is take the indie film paradigm and move it to television. Like, I didn't understand why, television makers have to go through this sort of factory system where you go in and pitch, and then you get this, and then it goes through this, and they put in a star, and it's like an assembly line, right? And so I was like, and yet, during the pandemic in particular, people were watching shows. I was like having people that I know, from my hometown in Wisconsin calling me up and going, I just watched the best drama about this Icelandic fisherman. They didn't know who any of those people were. They didn't even, they were looking at subtitles. But people, I don't think audiences care about the same thing that the Hollywood television makers care about. I feel like we watch tons of series that come in from overseas. And we're like, oh, this feels so fresh. This feels so fun. Because they don't have the same sort of restrictions that are put on our corporatized system here. So I decided to take a chance and see if I'm right. I hope I am. I hope that the people that have seen the show love it. I just need to get it out there and have more people see it. So I think somebody will take a risk on it. I mean, it's a finished show. It's 8 episodes. It's great fun. It's great acting. It's really good writing. And I feel like we're building our audience through social media, too. So we're going to have, we have 51 people in our cast. So we're going to have quite a built-in audience when it goes to TV.
Michelle, final question. Are you also getting feelers from people in your boat who would like to do what you're attempting to do, which is really break ground in terms of how to get new shows on, especially because you have things like crowdfunding, you have blockchain, you have NFTs, which could help fund shows, equity crowdfunding, seasons, organizing like Seed and Spark, ways to turn what you're doing and make it a trend, make it something that more producers, especially people who are doing TV festivals like Series Fest and Dance with Films and the former New York TV Festival, can get an easier road to success.
Well, that is one of my great hopes in doing this, is to create a path and actually, as a company, to help boost up some of those people. As I said, one of the really weird, or I guess it's not weird, but, you go to a film festival with your film and your film gets picked up for distribution. It's not quite that simple, but You know, whereas you go to, you know, you go to a festival with your television pilot, and believe me, I've seen some great television pilots at these festivals, really good, stuff that could just be, like, made into a show right then and there. I mean, I saw a lot of great stuff at these festivals. And yet, because the television system isn't set up that way and the festivals aren't hooked in that way, there's no path to do that. So the best that can happen right now when you go and win a television festival is that a network likes your idea, basically dismantles the whole thing and builds it back in their own image. Whereas that's really not the reason you make a pilot. You make a pilot to tell your story. So I really want to start a path and really create a space, even in the future, with my production company helping bring people into this fray, if we have success with the show, where your vision as a television writer, and I don't know if it's because people think that, you know, there's still that ridiculous stigma of television isn't as, you know, imaginative as films. I would say far to the contrary. But, you know, where you can keep your vision, where it's not just like that you're not just spitting out ideas for people to churn through a machine, you know, that even if you are, you know, me, who's not, doesn't have a huge showrunner name, you can come up with an idea, with a concept, with a story that's valid enough to put on television. And I'm really hoping to be, you know, starting a movement that's going to do that. You know, I've done, this morning I did something that nobody I don't think has ever done before, which has given me great inspiration. I finished my shampoo and conditioner at the exact same time. So I now feel like I can pretty much do anything.
There you go, taking on the world. Again, the project is called Middlehood. We'll keep you posted on how it's doing. And before I tell you about something else, which you can see, we will, as soon as we learn what network or what service will take the program, we will definitely have Michelle back to talk about that and maybe have a representative from the network as well. In the meantime, if you want to see the original two episodes that were presented at Series Fest and other TV film festivals around the country, there is a website you can check it out on, middlehood.tv. That's MIDDLEHORD, Middlehood, HOOD, excuse me, Middlehood.tv. It's Middlehood.tv. You can see the first two episodes and much, much more as well. And again, as soon as we learn who is going to take the program, Michelle will be back. Michelle, it's great to reconnect with you. Congratulations on everything you've done so far to make this happen. And who knows, we may see that movement with you being
the
leader. It's been a pleasure to have you on, and keep us posted.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much. I enjoyed talking to you. Thanks a lot, Simon.
You're welcome, Michelle. Take care. Enjoy a great weekend.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Michelle Palermo from Middlehood joining us live from Los Angeles. Time now for our classic trivia question of the week. We posed this initially on Monday. Actually, we did it a couple of weeks earlier. We had to take time off because of my personal situation. Here's the question. Who was Joe Friday's first partner on the original 1950s TV series of Dragnet? Who was Joe Friday's first partner on the original 1950s Dragnet television series? We'll either take the actor's name or the character's name. And if you are first to email the correct answer, we have a trio of prizes for you. We have two wonderful books, Tune In Tomorrow by Randy Dawn and Flirting with Fame by Dan Harary, both recent guests on this program, and from AMC Networks, their new Notepad and Notepad case. So if you have the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name, where you're emailing from. If you first get the correct answer, you win. If we don't get a winner by the end today, we'll post the question tomorrow morning, and if need be for the weekend, at Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to play in, you got to win. In order to win, you got to play in. Do it today. And who knows, maybe on Monday, we'll have a winner. And it could be Y-O-U. Before we reach the top of the hour, a special thought. We found out yesterday that one of the great pioneers of sports television on cable and elsewhere passed away at the age of 66 from cancer. His name is Fred Hickman. Fred was a pioneer in every respect. I sort of call him the happy warrior of sports television. He was one of the two original anchors with also late Nick Charles of Sports Tonight when CNN started its nightly sports center type show at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. from the get-go, you knew that Fred was very special. He did his homework. He had a great smile. He had great attitude. He and Nick Charles made a fantastic team for the first few years of CNN's existence. Following that, he became one of the first hosts of Inside the NBA on TNT. He also was a SportsCenter anchor for several years, and he also was one of the first anchors on YES, the Yankees Entertainment Sports Network, one of the most popular regional sports networks around. He had also done work at various local television stations, and his final role, another pioneering role, he was the original sports anchor at Black News Channel. He retired last year. He was going to do a podcast. He was also possibly going to do a book on sports, and then he learned in February that he had cancer. And as I said earlier this week, it took his life at the age of 66. He leaves behind a wonderful wife, kids, and millions of fans who saw his work all over the place on broadcast, cable, and other television sources. Fred Hickman, one of the very best, dead at the age of 66. I had a chance to meet him a couple times. He was just a wonderful person to talk to. You could talk sports or anything with him. Like I said, one of the great happy warriors. And it's really a shame that this year we are losing some of the best people ever in TV sports. Vin Scully several months ago, now Fred Hickman. They don't get better than those two people, for sure. When we come back, we're going to go live to Seattle, Washington, and our third guest of this day will join us. She is a first-time producer of a new series on PBS and PBS Passport that takes an unusual take on the world of financial guidance. It's called Opportunity Knocks. The person is Jamie Strayer. You will meet her after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogsofradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com. Together, reaching over 75 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out the January Jones Show. It's one of BTR's longest running. Next episode is Tuesday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific, the January Jones Show, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best be charged 24/7, YouTube.com. And remember, YouTube is now available more and more on smart TV sets and devices, as well as multi-channel bundles. Welcome back to our final half hour of this 90-minute Veterans Day 2022 edition of Tomorrow Be Televised, and welcome those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Sometimes I'm with you live from New Haven, New York, 65 degrees at the top of the hour. We have rain on and off, the remnants of former hurricane, then tropical storm, now tropical depression Nicole. We're supposed to get the big part of it, the big chunk, tonight, overnight, into early Saturday morning. So hang in there, everybody that's dealing with that storm. It is going to pass. And we have a great guest coming your way in this final half hour, so be involved. Give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Number good anywhere. You'll catch us with the country around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. Or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And don't forget, you can anytime check in on Facebook using their timeline feature. Just follow the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, tune in to speaker screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Our final guest of this trio of women who are out to make it big on television is a first-time producer on PBS, and also PBS's service on smart TV sets known as Passport. It's a very unusual series. It's called Opportunity Knocks. Here to talk about it live from Seattle, Washington, is producer Jamie Strayer. Jamie, welcome in.
Thank you, Simon. I'm so happy to be here.
And we are happy to have you aboard. This is a program that really does something very, very different with the whole idea of guiding families to use their money, use their finances in a better way. And it's something that you really took a stand on.
Yeah, it's actually the mission of my life is to really help people that are struggling to move forward and give them access to opportunities, because everyone deserves access to opportunity. And unfortunately, it's restricted to just the few. So we're out to change that.
Why did you decide this was the right time to get into television and really oversee this?
My mother passed away from brain cancer, and her life was really dedicated to this. She ran the employment office in my hometown, and she knew how all of the nonprofits worked together and could lift people up. Because when we're talking about money for most Americans, this idea of just simple advice and budgeting is actually offensive. You know, 42% or 51 million Americans are living on survival budgets. So if they already have a full dollar spent and they don't have a single penny left over, then we're actually feeding into a trope that's really gaslighting them that they're doing something wrong And so it's not fair even that only some people know how to leverage nonprofits and other organizations to tackle those difficult situations so that they can begin to move forward financially. And that really was the inspiration for the series. I thought it was a way of making my mom's spirit live on.
And by the way, condolences to you and your family on the passing of your mother. And I'm happy
with
an inspiration to make this series happen. How does Opportunity Knocks work?
Opportunity Knocks is life-changing TV, not only because the people's lives that are featured in their six families, their lives are truly changed. And it's not something that we leave and it was just for the cameras for a few months. They're forever connected to nonprofits in their communities so that it is sustainable. But at the same time, they do have opportunity coaches that are celebrity experts. Gene Chotsky, who for 25 years was on the Today Show providing financial insights. Luis Barajas, who was named by People Español as one of the 50 most beautiful people for his work as a financial healer. And Patrice Washington, who was forever on the Steve Harvey Show as the financial advice provider and has 12 million downloads of her podcast, Redefining Wealth. They are giving advice, but they're also guides, and they provide access to a tool called the Opportunity Finder that viewers themselves can use at home. And it really is the star of the show because people can go there and say, I need free legal aid. You know, if someone loses their driver's license, they can't even get a job. They can't even get to work. And unfortunately, it's happening for more people than they're willing to talk about because people are living in silence because of their shame. And the same thing, I want to start a business. Well, I don't have the money to start a business. There are all kinds of nonprofits out there providing free business mentorship and these unusual miracle institutions that nobody knows about that are called community development financial institutions. What a boring CDFI. They actually provide life-changing loans to people that have subprime credit to get them out of payday loans. And you see those rip-off auto dealerships that are like, we give everybody a loan no matter what your credit is. And the people pay $800 a month for a car that has 100,000 miles on it. And they have to. And so these organizations provide, in the show, it's saving one family $800 a month, another family $1,000 a month. And these are people struggling even to pay rent and for food. And so this series can not only, because of that technology, be beautiful and inspirational and kind of the Ted Lasso of reality television, but also change the lives of viewers at home and not through advice that's actually insulting and out of touch with what most people are experiencing.
How did you find the families that are being coached, and how did PBS find the program?
So we'll start with the families because now I know enough that we should have used a casting agency. As a first-time producer, the whole show should be credited to Brian Spohr. He's our director. When I recruited him, I'm like, you can be the showrunner. You know TV. I don't. And he worked on 47 hit reality TV series and a two-time primetime Emmy nominee for Wahlburgers. He just came off 90 Day Fiancé. And I joked around and said, do you want to do something meaningful with your life? And in all reality, he said, I do want to work on something that makes my family proud, that I can be proud on. And he identified with our mission. And so before he got involved, we went out and worked directly with nonprofits for casting and said, are you working with anyone that's struggling to make ends meet? And we went into Facebook mom groups and looked for moms asking for help with diapers. And we went into school teachers. Most people don't know. School teachers are making low income. So is every enlisted man and woman in the United States. They're making what's considered low income. These are America's heroes. And so we went into those forums and said, you know, we're looking for people that want to be courageous and share their story. And what turned out to be the people that chose to be on the show, they themselves want to help other people, even by opening the doors to their own what would be embarrassing situations, since most people are living in financial shame.
We're speaking with first-time producer Jamie Strayer. She is the creator and producer of the new financial guidance series, Opportunity Knock. There's two ways you can find it. In some cases around the country, it's playing on your local PBS station, as we always say with public television. And by the way, on Monday we had David Horn, the executive producer of Great Performances, which is now his 50th season on PBS. It's on, by the way, tonight on many PBS stations at 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. You have to check your local listings on any of the PBS station area and where it plays it, because many PBS stations do not play it at a particular given time. It runs all over the map. Secondly, it's also running on Passport, which is the PBS service available on smart TV sets, smart TV devices, and other devices as well. Jamie joins us live from Seattle, Washington, this half hour on Smart Be Televised. And wherever you are joining us on this Veterans Day 2022, we are happy to have you aboard for the program about TV's current and future. Simon Alban with you live from New York, 65 degrees, raining at the top of the hour. If you have a question or comment for our guests, make that phone call. We want to hear you, your question, your feedback, etc. 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Monday on Smart Be Televised, you're going to meet a made-for-TV movie mogul. He didn't start out that way. In his late 20s, he produced Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman with James Seymour for CBS. Ran a good long while, that medical historical drama. His name is Tim Johnson, and now he is one of the top made-for-TV producers around. His own production company that every year makes more than 40 made-for-TV movies, and he's got 11 coming your way on various channels over the next 2 months for the holiday season. Tim Johnson of Johnson Productions Group. He will be with us live Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. From the get-go, Jamie, you made it very clear you wanted several things to happen or not happen on Opportunity Knocks. One is you did not want personal trauma. You did not want, you know, the kind of thing that can sometimes have an unscripted series go over the line, at least for some people.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you can see that actually on some of the hit reality series that Brian Spohr worked on. You know, you look at 90 Day Fiancé, it's incredible as far as the drama and the excitement. In our show, the drama is real because the people are struggling. There doesn't need to be interpersonal arguments that we need to feature. I said, you know, it's really the Ted Lasso of reality television, because we're cheering on the people that are underestimated. And let's face it, there's been times in our lives that we've all been underestimated. Ted Lasso was underestimated. And so we made a commitment that we were not going to exploit the families that in ways that didn't involve exactly the situation they were faced with right then. So an example of that, there was a family and they had a financial argument. And the whole crew was outside. We could have easily gotten the mic up, put it towards the window, and had that, and some other reality shows would have. But their story, what they were going through, was already trauma enough. There was no reason to increase their shame when really the intention of our show is to have people see themselves in the real families that are cast, and to see their own better future opportunity knocking for them and the way that they can move forward. So that is something different about our series. And we are funded by a nonprofit, the National Council for Financial Opportunities. And we have a social justice take on things that the entire show is driven by our values.
Yes. In fact, one of the things is that when it comes to underwriting your series, you made it very, very clear. If you have a history of discrimination, if you are a predator in terms of financial services, or you deal with vulnerable people in a particular way, don't come knocking the door to underwrite our program. You're not welcome.
That's exactly right. I mean, we have said when people have contacted us about underwriting it, we do our due diligence. We have said no, because there is power in whom is associated with this brand. It's more than a TV show. We're a movement to change lives. We're going to be doing opportunity events. in communities. You think about Antiques Roadshow, where they bring their antiques in at the convention center in the community. We're going to have nonprofits and these not-for-profit credit unions and CDFIs, and people can come in and get the real coaching like they saw in the guidance to solutions, just like the families that they're inspired by on Opportunity Knocks. And certainly we're not having predatory lenders there at the table or other predatory services.
Now, when it comes to the guidance or the resources that are available to these families, what are you looking for in terms of who can reach out to these families, what kind of service they can provide? Are you trying to do diversity in terms of, let's say, giving organizations that have proven themselves but may not be known generally to people, particularly if they're run by people of color or other unrepresented communities, as you like to say, a shot in terms of dealing with these families?
Absolutely. And actually, anyone that's listening right now and wants to learn more about this, on our website, opportunityknocks.net, we have a tool. It's called the Opportunity Finder. It is featured in the show. There are 17,000 nonprofits in it currently, and it's broken down into categories like, I need to keep more money in my pocket. I need to make more money. I need to solve a transportation problem. I need to solve a housing problem. I need a specific solution. And in that, like with, for my own situation, my unique in it is LGBTQIA resources. There's business mentorship. There's free legal aid. We look at organizations like SCORE Mentors that are retired business executives and founders giving advice to first-time entrepreneurs. There are these micro business lending organizations like Kiva, like Lending Club, that are you can schedule a direct appointment. We have involved with us as a new advisor, Chris Horton, who's involved with the Black Entrepreneurs Project, the Aspen Institute. We've used their research, and a woman that I greatly admire, Dr. Donna Beagle, whose research on communicating across boundaries is working with nonprofits across the country and financial institutions about why their language is actually discriminatory. If we think about, you know, 60% of people living paycheck to paycheck, how insulting is it to have financial literacy classes? Raise your hand if you're illiterate. Does anyone want to walk in that door? Or for the people that are living on survival budgets, 51 million Americans, it's like 42% of people. You're going to teach me about budgeting? I'm using every single penny and I'm putting food on my table and gas in my tank. And I actually think some of the programs that are out there right now, other programs dealing with finances, are really unintentionally feeding into that trope. We have a society that's making people that are working hard feel like they're doing something wrong when that's not it. Yes, they need the advice, but they actually need guides to leverage what's out there so that they can achieve financial freedom. And that's what our show is about and how it's different.
What kind of viewer feedback are you getting early on?
Oh, we just heard from a viewer that saved $250 a month by getting rid of a predatory loan. And they only saw the first episode. This was after the first episode, and they were inspired by one of the cast members and sought that family out, and the family member told her what to do, which is actually the solution the family member is presented with in episode 6. We only have 3 of our episodes out already, and people are inspired and wanting to jump forward in the series and reaching out to cast to say, how did you do this? How did, you know, what's it turn out for you? Because they can feel that it isn't. We've got a lighthearted, it's funny, it's fun, it's inspiring, and people already want to know how the how their stories turn out so much that they're reaching out to cast members. Like, what did they do? Your situation's a nightmare right now.
And when it comes to PBS, whether it's individual PBS stations or Passport, which is available, I believe, on smart TV sets and smart devices, have we heard whether what time of day they are running your series in? Is there a possibility of, let's say, moving the show to prime time or weekends or other times when people can are more in an opportunity to see the show, see the program?
That's That's a terrific question, and we have made it easy for interested viewers to go to our website, click on how to watch, and it has a full list of the stations that are broadcasting. It also gives really three easy steps to watch it on Passport. And of course, our mission is to change lives, so every episode is available on our website to stream right from it at opportunityknocks.net. And yes, the stations can move us to even better time slots than they're at. And the best way to do that is for people in their own communities to say, I see this show is changing lives. I want more people to watch it. Please move it to a better time slot. Because that's how public television stations work. It is through that direct contact with the stations. And anybody can call them. Anybody can write to them. And so if you see this show, you want it in your community, and you want it in a good time slot, go to your local station, call and email them and say, this programming is important. Put it in a good time slot. And they listen to the community. They have that in their charter. It's what their mandate is to do.
Final question for you, Jamie. What's it been like for you to enter this medium? And what have you learned the most about producing and overseeing a television program?
Wow. What I learned most is, thank goodness I found Brian Spohr, who is an expert and is our showrunner and director, because the show would never have gotten made and be as incredibly entertaining and funny and fun as it is without his experience as a two-time primetime Emmy nominee that's done 47 reality TV shows. I was lost without him. And so I would say to anyone breaking into television, educate yourself on what you're looking for in partnership, because there is a steep learning curve. And in the do-good world that I came from, it's very different from the Hollywood world. I'm very trusting. I'm very transparent. I'm out to change lives. And it really did take someone that has a good heart like Brian that also knows how to make entertaining television, because left to my devices, the show would have been boring and no one would have watched. But Brian has made this fantastic show that has heart. It has humor that people can see themselves in. And that's why people are going to love watching the show.
You can find Opportunity Knocks in two ways. In some areas around the country, it's through your local PBS station. Again, check your local the PBS station in your area if they run it, and if so, what time, because it's not all the same when you go from city to city to city. Also, you can see the program on Passport. That's the PBS service available on smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles. For more details about the program and about the organizations that maybe can help you if you're dealing with a financial situation, go to opportunityknocks.net. That's opportunityknocks.net. And for more details about Passport, pbs.org. And incidentally, if you missed our episode on Monday with David Horn, the executive producer of Great Performances, don't forget, in many PBS states on tonight, 50th season continues. That's tonight at 9:10 Eastern Pacific Time. Again, go to pbs.org. Jamie Strayer, thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations on your introduction to the TV world, and congratulations on the difference it's making for a lot of people, the ones who are on camera and many people off camera around the country who are having the chance to see your program. And all the very best with it going forward.
Thank you, Simon.
You're very welcome, Jamie. Take care. Enjoy the weekend to the max.
And you as well.
Jamie Strayer, the creative producer of Opportunity Knocks on PBS and PBS Passport, joining us live from Seattle, Washington. And now time for our regular Friday feature, the Takeaway of the Week, where we highlight a development that took place this week, and we tell you why it could really impact the future of how you watch and use television. We had a number of possibilities this week, and it ended up being this, that after decades being an also-ran service when it didn't used to be, VH1 is now going to be moving from oversight by MTV to oversight by BET. For me, this is a very, very important and very smart decision. VH1 started in the 80s as a complimentary music service to MTV. It did very well with shows like Behind the Music. It did Top 20 Video Countdown. It did some scripted filming for a while. Lately, it's done some made-for-TV movies. But in recent decades, it's been really a shadow of its former self. Not much music programming. A lot of unscripted shows. Yes, it has the Emmy Award-winning RuPaul's Drag Race and its spinoffs. but other shows like Black Ink Crew, Love and Hip Hop, But here's the thing about BET. BET is an infrastructure that VH1 can tap into. Under Scott Mills, BET has expanded to have BET Her, which is a complimentary network. Of course, BET Plus, now its third year as a mega content service. BET Studios, which involves such producers as Kenya Barris and stars like Taraji P. Henson. And when you have that kind of infrastructure, VH1 could really expand its diversity of programming and really become something special again. At least that's what I hope Scott Mills is thinking. And if he's thinking that way, VH1 may be finally on the road to having its mojo back again. It's really missed it, with the exception of RuPaul's Drag Race and its spinoffs, for quite a long time. So again, BET now has direct oversight for VH1, not MTV anymore. And I think that's our takeaway of the week. I want to thank all three of our guests for being with us today. Like I said, they all have something in common. They are making their mark in a big way, first time in one way or another, as series producers or showrunners. I really hope you like the show. I want to thank all three of our guests and their public relations people for making it happen. Coming up Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, Tim Johnson, the made-for-TV movie mogul, whose production company will do 40 made-for-TV movies this year and has 11 set to go this holiday season. He will be our lead guest. And don't forget, 1 week from Monday, we will have the first of our Thanksgiving week triple header. That's three episodes back to back to back, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. We're planning great guests, each and every one of them. So we hope you tune in and tell your friends to do so as well. And again, thank you to everybody for all your thoughts and prayers and Facebook and Twitter postings about what I'm dealing with. Hopefully next week, everything willing, we will finally get this resolved. I got the MRI from NYU Langone. If you want to get an MRI, that's the place to go. Very, very special people. It's one of the best health organizations around. And hopefully we are on the road to recovery. If you missed any part of the program, check us out in a few minutes on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Don't forget our podcast, whether it's iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, et cetera. Podcast version coming up in a few minutes. Check us out all weekend on our podcast sites and our website, tomorrowbetelevised.com. We'd love to hear from you. What do you think about our show today? What do you think about the future of television? Remember, go to simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. I do respond to what you have to say within 24 hours. Remember, we enjoy hearing from you, and we answer because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed are those of the participants. They are not members of Blog Talk Radio, host of this program. Annie Till is BTR's general manager. Jay Sonnenberg, head of content. Website certified by On Podium, the Internet's great new podcast outpost. Guitarist Vegas is our web coordinator. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your Veterans Day. And to all of our veterans, thank you for your service. Thank your families for standing behind you. And this nation stands behind you now and forever. We'll be back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio, all of our podcasts and web destinations. Whatever you're doing to you now, and I hope a fantastic weekend. Everyone dealing with the storm, Hurricane Nicole, remnants, please take it easy. This will be done by this weekend being over. And if you haven't been vaccinated, check in with your doctor, find out all the alternative treatments, and then make a great choice, your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.